Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for November the 2nd, 2021. I'm your host, Joe McElvain. Others on the call who want to introduce themselves by name so people listening along can put a name to the voice, now is the time to do that.
Hi, I'm Sean Allen.
I'm Riley.
I'm Red.
I'm Jason Carr.
So hello, everyone. We don't have very many items on our agenda today. We will start with pull requests 3907 in the PonyC repo, remove usage of JIT tests. This is an exciting one.
So it also now removes all the JIT period from the runtime, whereas before the code gen still had stuff where you could turn on the JIT, and it no longer does. We had two issues. We had two issues to fix. One of them, which was a timeout of the cycle detector test when using the debug version of the cycle detector test on AR64, that was fixed by increasing the timeout a little, which was not particularly surprising to me, as when I ran it on a Raspberry Pi, it would take anywhere from 5 to 15 seconds for it to do its thing. So it was a 10 second default is what was there. So that wasn't too surprising. The other is some weirdness with linking for on a Mac OS. I looked and didn't see anything that was obviously wrong. Unfortunately, I don't have a Mac, so I can't really easily fix that. I asked Borja if he could take a look while Gordon is away, but I know Gordon also doesn't have a Mac, so we might need some tag teaming of folks with good CMake knowledge and folks who have access to Macs in order to be able to bring the last little bit of that home.
Thanks for that update. I wish I had good CMake knowledge. Yeah.
Just enough CMake knowledge to be dangerous is what I've determined.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat, although like I would say dangerous and ineffective for me.
mine is usually good enough that I can sort of get a thing like working enough so that it saved Gordon some time and he can make it actually really work correctly across the board.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Anything else we want to discuss on this pull request? All right. In that case, we will move on to pull request 3906 for the PonyC repo. This one is from me, adding preliminary code for WebAssembly. So on a lark, I decided I was interested in seeing, okay, what's the delta, what needs to happen for WebAssembly. And so I started kind of hacking things together. This pull request is, other than the CI failures, which I don't yet understand, it should in theory be mergeable. It's not introducing official support for WebAssembly. There's some additional stuff that needs to be done before this is like usable in any useful way, but it's enough to where you can do env.out.print hello world, and you can see that hello world in the browser, which is super cool. So among the remaining things that need to be figured out for this, the big one is, well, there's a lot more detail in the Zulip, and I think probably most people here have already read through that. But just for the people listening along, and summarize, mscripten running in the browser is kind of built around this assumption that, really, I would say the browser is built around the assumption that the browser events happen on the browser main thread. And really anything useful involving the browser needs to happen on the browser main thread. And so there's kind of an assumption that you can do things in background threads, and that's, you know, all of our pony threads are, you know, would be considered like background threads in the browser. You can do things in background threads, but we need to interact with like what the user actually is doing with events, or what the user sees with the DOM or whatever. That's all needs to happen on the main thread. And so we're returning to some problems that were familiar to Red, I think, because Red was encountering some similar issues when trying to integrate with GTK, because GTK also kind of has this assumption that GTK is running your event loop on a special thread that in Pony doesn't do well with special threads right now. And so we've been, Sean and I have been discussing a little bit how we might address this for the browser. It'd be super cool if it also helped with the GTK use case too, although that's a little bit more, vestigial, I guess. I don't want to downplay it, but ways to do the GTK thing.
I would be very surprised if what works for Nscripting would turn out to be an optimal or even decent solution for the GTK one. But I have been surprised by many things.
It depends on the shape of what we come up with. The fundamental issue that Sean and I have been noodling on over the weekend and since our last discussion on Friday was how do we get it's pretty clear from the nature of these Nscripting callbacks that some of them will need to allocate memory, because there's like things like memory buffers that Nscripting presents in the callback, where the lifetime of that memory allocation on the browser side is not guaranteed any time past the life of the callback. So you have to copy it into a new buffer that you own if you want to use it outside the callback. It's pretty clear that we need to be able to allocate memory to get that data back into Ponyland, running on a Pony scheduler thread. And so the open question is, how can we allocate Pony memory on the browser thread in a way that it can actually be freed safely later? It needs to be associated to an actor's heap, and that's all sorts of, an actor's object map. It needs to be associated to an actor's object map, and that raises all sorts of questions like what is the actor for the main thread. When Sean and I talked about having a single, like when you're running an Nscripting platform, having a single like static browser actor defined, but then there's the question of how can you become that actor safely from the browser thread if it might possibly be running on one of the scheduler threads. And so there needs to be some kind of, as of yet right now, unknown integration between the browser thread and the scheduler threads that lets it safely acquire an actor it can use for allocating memory to send the messages. And it's unclear how we would do that without major changes to the scheduler, and maybe major changes are what's needed.
I have a way to do it for the incoming stuff, which is not, it's not like, oh, well, that's so great, but it would work. But we still have the outgoing stuff to deal with, Joe. But the way that could, and I'm not saying this is a long-term solution, but it's something that would allow us to move forward to discover more problems, would be, is that, note, this is a very important caveat on that, because I'm not saying this is the greatest thing ever, but
right.
I sat down and thought of what is the most straightforward thing that we could do, right? That would be in the main thread, before we dispatch stuff off to be delivered to whatever actor is supposed to get this Nscripting event, right? Actor or actors that are supposed to get stuff, where we had talked about for that. We make a copy of the info. This is not Pony memory. It's not garbage collect protected or anything. And then we provide on an actor which is capable of receiving Nscripting events, we provide a trait which you can use for the mix-in style, or you could do this yourself, where when it receives the event, what it's responsible for doing is to actually take that memory, which is the non-pony memory that we allocated over on the other thread, copy it in such a fashion so that it becomes pony memory, and then free the stuff that was originally done on that other thread, so that any of the information from that event which came in can now be sent around to different actors and everything, and will be correctly garbage collected in the future.
That's interesting. It doesn't seem like it necessarily needs the second copy if it's just known that the event object that it received needs to be explicitly freed by calling some method.
The thing with that would be is that it needs to be explicitly freed, but how do you know when it needs to be explicitly freed? If it needs to be explicitly freed, then you couldn't really share the memory out to other actors, et cetera. You could only use it within that one.
You're right. It would be memory unsafe. Yes. It'd be memory unsafe API. And so it needs to be isolated to actors that are using like the Mscript and FFI calls to register for the events.
Yes. So I would never use
quarantine to the FFI code.
Yeah. I would never call this elegant or great for long term. I hope that we would come up with something better, but I shifted from trying to come up with something nice and wonderful to just what could we do that would allow us to move forward and find other problems.
There is one solution which might work to keep something bounded with lifetime, which is you could have an object which has a method which returns a value of capability ISO. Or the like, something like that could be bounded in lifetime without causing. It would still be locked to the actor until you clone it, though. But it would be safe.
So safe in you see it returns capability ISO and not ISO ephemeral. Is that the idea?
Yeah, okay. You could do that, and that lets you a few things. You'd probably have to. Almost immediately, like auto recover, and it's not still not the prettiest because there's like all the sendability constraints, but it would work. It would let you get something that's like managed until you clone it.
How would it be managed?
Yeah. Or not managed, but. You could restrict it from being accessed outside of the scope of the handler.
So my expectation was that yes, we would have something that we would also make it so that we'd at least try to do something like that. It still requires you still have to have the knowledge that needs to be manually freed, otherwise you leak the memory. Yeah. But yes, I would imagine we would. When it comes into the pony code where all of this would happen and like the trade or what somebody's doing, we try to provide some protection to make it so the worst thing you could do would be to leak memory, not create an unsafe condition. Yeah.
Well, still the worst thing you could double free it. Even the worst thing is definitely the double free.
You could give an ISO token, some nonsense like that, but.
Hey, it's FFI. It's a segmentation fault party.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, it's up to the implementer to understand what the API is.
So, could the code be basically wrapped to auto free? Would that be harmful to how badly would that go?
You mean it frees it after the method that it gets handed to is done running?
Yeah, and then the just basically mark a flag and whatever wrapper object is used so it doesn't
the problem would be is that this would be at least under the conception we have is that this would be the copied data would be asynchronously handled by one actor or potentially multiple actors who would have multiple copies of the of the data in each one would need to be, it needs to be freed when this message, which is in their queue, is processed. It needs to be handled as like, it would need, so that it's an asynchronous thing for that. So.
So Sean, you mentioned this not solving the outgoing case. What are your thoughts about why this doesn't solve that?
Because I didn't think about it at all in terms of the outgoing, and I still don't fully understand all of the ramifications of what we talked about for the outgoing, or even probably most of them. But I understand fairly well, I believe, from everything we talked about, you know, what is needed for the incoming case, but I'm still really hazy on what's actually needed for the outgoing.
Yeah, I may be a little bit less hazy, but I am still a little bit hazy on how exactly that should look. So yeah, we can try something with what you were saying. I guess I'll take a peek further into the outgoing and try to come up with a sketch of what that might look like based on this approach. And like you said, it would be great if we could come up with a better solution than this, but that's at least one that sort of works and could let us do stuff. And like you said, find other problems. So that makes sense to me. Okay, so I may be corresponding in Zulip further on that topic later, but I think that's a reasonable amount to cover for the call for now. Anyone else have anything they want to comment about that?
Honestly, from how it's described here, I think it would cover my case as well. If you're effectively creating a messaging system, for want of a better description, from what would be your browser's main thread into an actor, and then that actor would effectively be a proxy for actors in the rest of the environment, I'm certain I can work within that pretty easily.
So I'm not even sure it would be a actor, which is a proxy. That's for the incoming case. I don't think we need an actor, which is a proxy, but we might very well need for the outgoing case. For the incoming one, really, it's if you had an actor, which is a proxy, then in all likelihood, all that proxy is going to do is send stuff around to other actors. So you could design an incoming messaging system to be one where, hey, here's my actor Foo, here's my actor Bar, and they're both going to register to receive, say, EnScripten key press events. And the system which is responsible for distributing EnScripten events to actors can handle putting messages on the queue for both.
Yeah, that's perfect. That would work perfectly for me.
For outgoing though, I don't think something like that would work. And it would be, is there two different sides to a system? Is it two entirely different systems for ingoing and outgoing? I mean, there's a lot of questions there, but hopefully this could at least move us forward to being able to play around with it more and have it not be theoretical, but have it be, we tried it and XYZ are a problem.
Absolutely.
Okay, moving on to the next topic in the auto-generated agenda, we have pull request 3880 from Sean, adding build instructions for 64-bit Raspbian. Is this ready for going in, or is this still? It's a, it's the do not merge, so it's not ready to go in yet.
It's not ready to go in yet. Yeah.
Okay. We have pull request 3788.
What did you do to cache bus, Joe, on 3906? Okay.
Going back to 3906. So my understanding from Gordon in Gordon's comment, that the cache key is based on the hash of lib/cmakelists.txt. And what I did was I moved the configuration of which LLVM arches we build I moved it from the make file into libs/cmakelists.txt. one, so it would break the cache for this PR, but also it would break the cache for future PRs that may change the list of targets to build.
Yep, that would bust the cache. That should bust the cache.
Okay.
Okay. So let me go look here before we jump onto the others. Let me see what happened with all of these things that failed. They all failed after 23 minutes. So, or 20 minutes or something. So yeah, the cache got busted.
Okay. We busted.
Let's look here. So yes.
Undefined cache, reference to a bunch of stuff.
Yep. Cache was definitely busted. So there's actually, it's now, a bunch of undefined reference stuff. So the cache that you did bust the cache. Okay. And the nice thing is, at least for you in the future, that if you don't bust the cache again, from the switch I did like 6 weeks ago, all of that stuff is in the cache. It used to be the job had to run to completion for the cache to be updated. And now it's the building of the cache step has to complete. And then we upload it so that if you run into an error like this later, you still got the cache, your new cache.
Cirrus CI doesn't give away to like SSH into the machine like some other CI platforms do. Is that right?
I don't know if it does or not, because that's not a thing I ever do. Let's see. Wait, view.
I've used it before for quicker iteration. Stuff.
Yes, it has rerun with terminal access. If you pop open the task on the little right there, it's got rerun with terminal access.
Oh, there's a drop down for the rerun. Yay. Okay, I see. That is beautiful. I'm so happy that I saw that, because that would be that's a big help to me. So thank you. All right. Moving on
I'm glad I saw your comment go by that you had left on there and we had that little conversation.
Yeah, that was a helpful one. Moving on to 3788, this is from Ryan. Add README for each examples entry. It looks like Ryan was waiting on Borja to add some remaining examples. That was done. However, I see a CI failure, Windows MSVC failing after 10 minutes. What is the issue here?
That's almost assuredly the existing TCP. What the hell is going on? Because we can't make it fail locally, but it happens in CI on a regular basis, failures. Yep.
Okay. But and I see this does... is still marked with do not merge anyway, so it's not going to be. But yeah, so there's no issue with the CI for real.
I'm going to drop a note to that effect just to make sure.
Sounds good. And then for issues, we have the upcoming release issue, and we have two tickets that I pinged when I did the WebAssembly PR to just cross-link them. So those aren't necessary to talk about. Those are just other tickets that we're talking about WebAssembly. I cross-linked them to the PR for reference. All right, that takes us through, and we're right about at the 30-minute mark in, which is when we usually ask for other topics anyway. So does anyone have any other topics they'd like to bring up on the call?
Maybe.
Let's do it.
All right. When using CFFI, I'm writing a whole bunch of stuff that's using structs, so using struct in Pony. And the way that glib works is basically you'll have a struct and then you cast the struct to something else. If an object inherits from another object, then you cast the struct to the other object and then you can execute methods on it and so on and so forth.
Is there multiple inheritance?
There is multiple inheritance. And I can simulate that by
how does that cast?
They have a macro that does it. But basically the way that it's done is that the first field in every struct is basically the struct of the previous parent. So not a pointer to it, but the same thing. So basically they can hand. So for example, if we're talking about a GTK window, then that struct is actually identical to a GTK widget, except it's got some GTK window stuff tacked on the end. So they can hand stuff around like that.
But there's still only one. There's only one parent at any given time, right?
Right. Yes, but then that parent can have another parent, is what I meant.
Right.
So GTK window inherits from GTK widget. GTK widget inherits from G object.
Right.
So I'm able to simulate that, and I'm able to, you know, basically move my struct in that direction easily enough. I just basically look up the field, because my first field is an embed whatever the parent is, right? So I can go in that direction fine. The problem comes when I'm dealing with things like when I'm either holding a list of widgets and then I need to run something on them. So say, for example, I build a UI. When I ask the build module for the window, it doesn't hand me a window object, it hands me a widget. So I now need to get that widget into to be typed in Pony as a GTK window. And so that...
And widget is the parent of window, right?
Widget is the parent of window, yes.
Okay. It's definitely a memory unsafe operation, because like if you allocated in Pony a widget, mm-hmm. if you did like, you know, GTK widget new with whatever constructor that is, right? Mm-hmm. That would allocate enough space for the widget, but not enough space for the window. And mm-hmm. so it's definitely a memory unsafe operation. And I think that So the generic answer that Pony gives is that all the memory unsafe operations have to be FFI calls.
And rightly so. Yeah.
And so I think what you probably need is just an FFI call that's like, you know, give me a pointer. I'll give you a pointer of a different type. But actually, this raises kind of an interesting point about when we made the change to use to have use declarations for every FFI call.
It does. And that becomes a little more complicated, of course, because we can no longer specify the return type in the at the actual execution site. It assumes.
Yeah. I was going to mention that this, we may need to make some kind of.
I don't think that's a bad thing. So I think what would be reasonable is not for you to have a single cast function in this case, Red, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to have a thing that says I have a blah and I believe it to be a foo, right? Mm-hmm. And I assume there's a way that if you get a widget and you think it's a window and it's not actually a window, that in the C macro stuff on the
on the
GTK side, it's able to go, yeah, no, it's not.
Yep. In fact, right. I'm actually able to identify what type of object it is pretty easily as well, right. Just by asking what its type
right.
is.
So I would imagine that your CFFI stuff is actually like, I want to go from A to B, I want to go from A to C, I want to go from A to D, and you have a function for each of those with the return type of A, of B, C, and D on the Pony side. And you can do the C stuff on the other side to do either, I will do this conversion for you, or I'm going to give you a Pony error back. This conversion is not possible because you're not getting the thing that you think you're getting.
Do Pony errors still work in CFFI? Because
you can return a Pony error out of CFFI code.
Yeah, okay. And you return it by calling Pony error. There's a function in that you can see in Pony.h. So if you include Pony.h, you can, or you could just do a forward declare of your own for the equivalent function. But yeah, there's a Pony_error that you call. It raises an exception, and the exception unwinds the stack, and it's okay. Recognized as a Pony exception within Ponyland.
So with the exception of the Pony error stuff that you just mentioned, this was actually the direction I was already going. The reason I asked about it again was because in the last conversation we had about it, somebody asked if it made sense to have this kind of method inside of the Pony API. The answer to that, maybe no, it's not a problem either way because I can still do it. I mean, basically, I just take a U64 and return the same U64 after validating it. The only other question I've got is there's no way to like embed C code inside of Pony, right? There's no way of actually doing any of that. I've actually got to create separate C, compile it with C-lang, stick it in an archive, and then link it, right? There's no easier way of doing this right now.
Yeah, that's correct.
For some definition of easy, yes.
Right. I figured that out just in case I was going the long way around.
It would be nice if we had libclang integrated and we could do something a little bit more magical. I don't know. What you mentioned earlier, I would personally be of the opinion that it would be nice to have an out of the box like FFI call that you could make to cast one thing to another unsafely, but again, it's FFI, so it's already unsafe. I would personally be in favor of that, but I know that's kind of a controversial opinion. So I think what you described, Sean, about checking the type and everything. If Red's able to check the type ID from within Ponyland and Pony Code, and all he's missing is just the casting ability, right? It's a little bit ridiculous to have to go and create a C file that was only just taking in a pointer and giving out a pointer for various combinations of pointers, or even just really for, I mean, there's the use declaration thing we have to talk about for polymorphism on that casting call. But to me, it seems like it'd be so much of a better experience if users did not have to compile a separate C library just to cast a pointer to another pointer. But I totally understand that it should be FFI rather than something that is a Pony Ponyland function. Anyway, that's my opinion.
Yeah, I think, so I'm not going to, I don't think that's anything that's going to move relatively quickly, even if we do decide to stick it in a Pony API, in a Pony API function later. So I'm going to continue doing it t'other way.
If we added like a Pony underscore cast, right, we'd have that same use declaration problem where I don't think it's supported right now. Maybe it is. I don't think it's supported to have multiple different like type signatures for the same C function.
No, you have to stick them in a different directory, basically, and then you can do it. But it's a little weird. So, I mean, the way that I'm going to end up having to do it is effectively creating a whole set of functions called to this type, to this type, to this type, to this type, to this type. And then having a separate signature for all of those types.
Yeah. If
anything, I'm trying too hard. I mean, the reality is I could have had this module done probably 6 months ago if I didn't even deal with typing it at all and I just used, you know, U64 everywhere. But it was really important to me to get get errors at compilation time, as opposed to at runtime. So that's why I'm going through all of this additional pain.
I think that's good. I think that's a good thing to get.
Yeah, I try. Or I'm trying one or the other. Or both.
Making it easier to take C code and link it into Pony programs in a way where you're not using a makefile or makefile.ps1, et cetera, and having a compiler available. I think that's certainly something that could be explored more. To help on that front with the Windows front, like regex, Gordon added the post-fetch script support to Corral, which could be a potentially interesting route to go of compiling as part of in your Corral.json that you set up in your library, of having both a POSIX and Windows scripts run to build the thing and see how far you can get down that route, as it's not been exercised very much. But I know that, you know, that one of the reasons why I started going down that route is, from what I understand, is that Cargo has a similar bit of functionality, so he thought that was reasonable. I believe that's the conversation I had. That is one interesting thing. Ideally, long term, I much like the idea, which Joe mentioned in passing, of actually using libclang, having a part of C, and then you can have the really nice, seamless experience that Zig has for that sort of thing. But that is a lot more work, but I think would be a great and wonderful thing to have if we could do that eventually long term.
So real quick, did anyone else have Sean's audio roboting, or was that just me?
I was struggling with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, just checking. So I wanted to mention that to you, Sean. But one idea that I had, actually, which is kind of an interesting middle ground between libclang and a lack of libclang, is let's imagine that we ask Red to write not C code, but LLVMIR, which it wouldn't be tricky to write LLVMIR that does what Red needs to do. And it's an interesting option because it would allow, we don't need any libclang integration. We don't need to understand any of the semantics of C. And Red can avoid having a dependency on, you know, having a specific, you know, compiler configuration available or whatever's needed to on the machine that's dealing with it, right? It could be integrated into Pony itself, saying, I want you to load this LL file. Like, let's say we have like a use directive that loads a .ll file instead of a Pony directory or instead of a C library like use does today. And then we could, there's a function within LLVM that lets you say like load LLVMIR from a string or from a file compile it in and link it together, like all in the, you can even link it, you know, you can link it directly to the module, not just like with like the object linker. So I think that's actually a really interesting option because it's not too difficult. It could probably be knocked out pretty quickly and would allow you to write simple unsafe functions to integrate into your Pony packages that just like come along for the ride with no extra effort or no extra compiling.
And you could also, instead of writing LLVMIR, if you're using Clang, potentially you could spit out the LLVMIR that you want from C, for example.
You're totally right. You could have that as a step that you do, and you could check in the LLVM code into your repo or as part of your published package, whatever other form that is. And then so the person on your end user machine doesn't need to have Clang, doesn't need to compile it, but you've kind of like pre-compiled the LLVMIR. It could be, if you have platform dependent stuff, it could get weird because you might need to do it for multiple platforms. But what Red is doing is not necessarily platform dependent.
Yeah, well, so the areas where I could see it getting interesting and funky is if it's 32 versus 64-bit type things potentially could come into play, maybe. I don't know, as a platform-dependent one, which might come into play. But yeah, and then on the use front, I mean, we already have the use lib scheme, right? There's the path scheme, there's the lib scheme. So there could be an LLVMIR scheme, you know, as an extension to the... as a use scheme, and I mean all the extension points are there for it, so it should be relatively straightforward, I would imagine.
And you know right? what? You can do the platform specific stuff by putting a use guard, like putting an if def guard on your use, right?
Yes, you can. You exactly can. So you could have different LLVM IR files for different platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also like this because it encourages you to keep all of this stuff as simple as possible and do it, keep as much as you can in Pony, which is going to be safer.
Yeah, well, so that's an interesting, idea. If anybody either on this call or they're listening along later, hears this, gets excited, wants to work on it, but wants some guidance or some paired programming or whatever to get started with it, I'd be happy to pair up with somebody on that who's interested in tackling it. All right. Cool. Yeah. So anybody who's interested in pairing on that, send me a message in Zulip. Otherwise, are there any other topics we want to discuss here?
Real quick topic. Last week when I had a horrible, awful migraine, the performance testing machine arrived. Basically didn't work for 4 days with horrible, awful migraine. So the performance testing machine, I'm probably not even going to unbox it for at least a week, if not two. But we'll be getting that done within, hopefully it should be within a month to have it fully set up, have scripts written for it so that you can use all of the CPUs to compile the Pony programs, but then run a script which will segment off most of the CPUs and reboot the machine so that you'll only have one for the OS and all the rest will be for the Pony program, blah, 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 et cetera, and then be able to start doing the performance testing stuff on it.
Very nice. But yes, take care of yourself with the headache stuff and make sure.
And getting caught up on
it. I don't think there's any rush. So,
yeah. I'd honestly rather be doing that than catching up on work, but I need to catch up on the work.
Don't say it on the recording, Sean.
Why? Anyway, no, I love performance testing. I love performance testing. This is not actually a case of I don't want to be doing the work thing. It's that I just really love to do performance testing.
Well, that makes at least one of us, but the at least one is not me. So I'm glad to hear you enjoy it. And I'm glad that you're the one that has a performance testing rig then. Okay. Anything else people want to raise for discussion before we end the call? All right. Well, thanks to everyone who attended and those listening along to the recording later. Have a great week. We'll see you next week.